No other drink has the mystique, the glamour, or the appeal of a classic martini. Doesn't matter if it's vodka or gin, dirty or with a twist, it's tuxedos, it's sophistication, it's the Great Gatsby, it's some bloke called Bond. But how has this drink managed to retain its iconic status after all this time? Master mixologist Dale de Groff joins me now. G'day, Dale.
G'day, Andy.
Where did the martini come from? Is there a single origin story for this classic drink?
That's something that simply doesn't exist. There was never a bartender who sat down and said, I'm going to put together vermouth and vodka or gin, and I'm going to call it a martini, because the drink started in the middle of the 19th century as something called a fancy gin cocktail, and it just kept evolving as tastes changed. And new products came in the market, like vermouth, for example, which arrived mid-century in the 19th century and started to be added to the basic spirits of the day, which were brandy, gin, and whiskey.
So you don't go in for the story of the Occidental Hotel in San Francisco, bartender Jerry Thomas, around about 1860 there?
I'm afraid the Martinez and all those other stories, in the end, they don't pan out. We have a historical oracle in the bar world called David Wondrich, who you should someday interview. He's such a genius at this. He's been following the faint trail of the cocktail, faint because people are usually tipsy, and the history never gets written down.
Well, there's always a bar napkin close by. It's amazing how many deals are done on napkins, let alone the accounting of history. Tell me about James Bond. I mean, the shaken, not stirred, vodka, not gin. It's been kind of contentious in itself, but the brand of vodka used in the Bond movies has changed several times in the history of the franchise.
It has.
I think 2002, it changed from Smirnoff vodka to Finlandia vodka, an opportunity for brands to get involved in product placement, I believe. Then again, It changed in 2014 to Belvedere vodka. So did James Bond and Ian Fleming fans even notice the change? And did the bartending world notice the change?
Well, I doubt it. It started, of course, with Smirnoff, and the whole idea of a second-rate screenwriter throwing one single line into the screenplay, shaken not stirred, just sort of stomped on 100 years of evolution of what was a very elegant stirred cocktail. So we all got angry about that. Those of us who are geeky and martini lovers, it was an opportunity for Smirnoff folks to spend a lot of money and have their bottle for 1 second in the shot.
Well, Lotus, Aston Martin, I mean, all those sorts of brands got involved with the Bond franchise. So tell me about the brand of, speaking of being geeky about the martini, does the brand of vodka or gin make a difference to a martini?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for the opening of the Grey Goose Le Martini Bar, a bar dedicated to the martini and variations on the classic made by noted bartenders from all around Australia and beyond, like me.
When someone walks into a bar, and I think bartenders are a pretty unique bunch, they're a bit like barbers or hairdressers. You get to sort of take the measure of a man or a woman pretty quickly. Can you tell what cocktail people will like just by looking at them?
Sometimes. I can usually make some sort of a close call, but my objective is actually to, and every bartender's, I think, is to, you have 30 seconds from the time they hit that door until they hit your bar to suss them out and find out, number one, can I serve this guy? Is he sober and ready to go here?
Have I had too many martinis?
Exactly.
Might be the pertinent question.
You know, and is this person uncomfortable in the bar? Are they just a regular bar fly? I mean, you have to make all these decisions really quickly and maybe do the thing that you think needs to be done to make that person happy at that moment. And maybe a single question will answer all that for you. Or lots of times people can come prepared. Or sometimes you want to challenge the customer who says, I'll have anything but vodka. And you'll say, well, it just so happens, I think I could make you a vodka drink that you'd like. And if you don't, you don't even have to pay for it. You know, that's a little game we played at the Rainbow Room, trying to make people drinks with the spirit that they least were friendly towards, and it was a nice game to play.
You really see a slice of life in bars. I used to run a bar in London in my 20s. And
you did?
Yeah, once upon a, it was a very small academic bar, mostly just geeks from Imperial College next door in South Kensington. Anyway, I saw the most amazing bits of human nature. For example, I saw one man give another man a bright yellow Lamborghini as a gift. And he put the tote bag on the bar and gave the other man a key, and they went outside and looked over this car. You see a slice of life that you don't ordinarily see anywhere else, not even in court, they say. What have you seen in your time?
Well, at the Rainbow Room, we had a pretty high end. And I also worked at the Hotel Bel Air in Los Angeles in the neighborhood Bel Air, which is really, really an extraordinary place. And I had... It's hard to even begin the stories, but for example, the piano player Bud Herman, who was there 20 years when I arrived, had played with Benny Goodman at the Flamingo many, many years before. And Bud kind of owned the room and had introduced people, and he got a similar kind of tip one day when a Oklahoma oil man who was a dear friend of his, also named Bud, ironically, Bud had introduced him to a fellow over the piano some years before, and Bud walked up to the piano one night and says, "You know, Bud, you introduced me to that fella, and he and I made a bucket of money together. I never even thanked you." And he slipped an envelope inside of Bud's tuxedo pocket. And when he came up to the bar later that night, Bud pulled it out and said, "Let's see what Thies has for me here." And he opens it up, and it was the deed to a 36-room condominium complex right next to the Hollywood Bowl.
That's a tip and a half,
isn't
it?
That's a tip and a half.
Yeah, you play it again, Sam. No worries if you're going to exactly. be given the deeds to condominium projects. It also is the case that, you know, the people that love cocktails will go to the nth degree. Like, you know, in Japan, there's this sort of culture about water and therefore ice that comes from a glacier, this sort of absolute pursuit of perfection. Mm. In your line of work, you must see people go to extraordinary lengths to perfect their art. What have you seen?
Well, you're exactly right, because one of the Japanese bartenders that I've spent time in Japan with, Ueno-san, Ueno Hideki, is the guy who crafts the perfectly round ice cubes with a knife, and he does it in about 40 seconds. And it's just the most extraordinary thing to watch. And if you have a drink in a bar in Tokyo, by the way, the bars are vertical in Tokyo. They're stacked up in buildings because there's so little room. And it's a tea ceremony, getting a drink. It never play in New York City, because people walk up to a bar in New York City, they want their drink in 30 seconds.
They're not waiting to get into an elevator first, no.
They don't want a tea ceremony, you know. But it is an extraordinary thing to watch if you happen to be in Tokyo. And he took me up to the whiskey distilleries up in the mountains that Suntory, and it's just an amazing culture. Mm. And yes, they have embraced whiskey, and they're making extraordinarily good whiskey. But I mean, the people I'm in town for, they get their water either from the watershed of the French Alps or from underneath the fields in Cognac, and it's this extraordinary water. By the way, the same water that you might find underneath Kentucky, because it's filtered through limestone or any calcification soil, and it is the best for any kind of spirit. It's iron-free, and it has exactly the right minerals. So those kinds of things are important when it comes to spirits. Really, you only have two things in a vodka. You have grain, and you have water. And it's how you handle those two things that make all the difference. And the drinks that I'm making with Grey Goose tell me that story really vividly. I did one, by the way, a martini with half vermouth, half Sauterne, I mean real Sauterne, and then an equal part of the Grey Goose vodka that was just over the top wonderful, and a dash of saline, 15% saline solution, just to give it a little brininess, and it just came out lovely. And that's what's going to be happening at this bar. Bartenders from around the world are going to be finding ways with three ingredients, or maybe four, or maybe five, because the first martini did have five ingredients, to put something together, but keeping the classic gin or vodka some kind of wine product like vermouth, and then adding their special touch to it. So it'll be a wonderful, as it develops and the menu grows, and you see the talent that these bartenders exhibited there. It's going to be a wonderful thing.
Dale, of course, we live in times of economic hardship. Perhaps people listening to this, certainly myself, it's been a while between drinks in a bar. And I know that trends and fashions sweep through the cocktail world as fast as they might in fashion itself. So what's on the way out? What's on the way in? I know that putting smoke into cocktails was a big deal in the last couple of years. Is that still a thing?
Sort of, but they found a more interesting way of doing it. Spritzing a smoky spirit, like an Islay Scotch or a smoky Village Mezcal instead of actual smoke. And you get a whole different dimension to that smoky drink. For example, a martini, if you were to, there is such a thing, by the way, as the smoky martini, which I used to make in the 80s and the 70s in New York City, because the Scotch drinkers, when they did order a martini, they'd say to the bartender, put a little splash of Scotch on top of this, and they call it a smoky martini. Well, that idea has now been developed and doubled down on as things like smoky Village Mezcals have come to market. They started doing something similar with that. Tequila and agave products in the United States have just, they're just the fastest growing thing happening in the spirits industry right now.
Very good. I think I'm getting a bit thirsty. I might have to come down and see you at Lee Martini. The bar is opening in Melbourne. Mixologist Dale de Groff has been my guest. Great to talk to you, Dale.
Thank you, Andy.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.